The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This owner refuses to call his organization an MSP. Let's find out why. A conversation with Marcus Olson on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech.
I always like to sort of start out because I can get these briefings and I can try a good job of summarizing your journey, but it's always better to hear it from you. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing now and how you got here.
Well, it's a long story, so I'm going to try and consolidate as much as possible. I grew up in Minnesota, so I moved to California when I was about 22 through an acquisition of a startup I was working at. Spent most of my time working, you know, in the server rooms and the data centers overnight and not really interacting with people in technology. And when the company I was working for, the startup got acquired, that's how I landed in California and got into consulting. I just needed a job. It paid very well. I didn't understand why I was being paid so well to do, frankly, things that I felt were underneath me from a technical perspective. I learned later why they pay so well for consulting, which is the hazard pay. But nonetheless, that's how I kind of got into consulting. And I worked for a small consulting firm that eventually evolved into an MSP. And that's where I spent about 2 years there. And as they kind of converted into an MSP, I kind of frankly just felt like that wasn't the direction that I wanted to go, and that I felt it was a divergence from the needs of the clients. I felt it was a business model that was frankly being created to solve the company's problems and not the client's problems. And so I left, and then that's when I started Pliancy.
So I want to ask a little bit about Pliancy. How do you view the organization?
Yeah, I guess, you know, the term MSP, if you go to our website, if you read our job ads, recs, et cetera, you'll see we never use the term MSP. And that's because I feel like there's a rebirth of consulting. And I'm going to be honest with you, I never left it. I've always felt like consulting was the right play. Align yourself to companies that are looking for consulting. They want to leverage technology to further their businesses, solve challenges. And as I saw the divergence kind of this MSP model, it felt like it was being relegated to help desk. And while at a time there was a demand for that, there was definitely a need for that at that time, that we need more help desk, et cetera. I kind of being in Silicon Valley and one of the few MSPs of our size, if not one of the only, that's kind of born and bred in Silicon Valley. I saw many years ahead of what challenges were going to be. And I felt like consulting was going to be needed. More technology coming to these small to medium businesses, these emerging startups, they needed technology to accomplish business goals, not technical challenges. And so I just held on to this consulting approach, pliancy, for many, many years. And about 4 or 5 years ago, when SaaS kind of burst onto the scene, that became very clear that that's what was needed. You got all these departments fighting over SaaS. I want to bring this SaaS in. I want to bring that SaaS in. We want to use this. How do I connect that? How do we secure this? And it was no longer about servers and closets and networking, really. That stuff really just became table stakes. So we kind of view ourselves as a consulting firm. We do bill hourly, for example, in 15-minute increments. We are, call me break fix on Reddit all day long. I don't mind. But the way I look at it is that's a variable component. And the idea that you could consolidate that into a predictable one is foolish. You know, every company is different. They have different demands and needs. And the idea that you can all you can eat that and build a sustainable business is different, difficult. So what we do have on the other side of our business is we do have predictable models, which is how you use SaaS, how we secure it, how we deploy it, manage it, automate it. That's all very, very predictable to us. And so we've built predictable product over there called our Pliancy platform. And that is the typical MRR, if you will, in this industry, combined with our hourly rate, which is billed in 15-minute increments. And it doesn't matter when you call us or who you talk to. So whether you talk to me, you talk to a tier three, if you will, in our tech ops team or a consultant, it's the same rate, same thing. There's no after hours minimums, et cetera. And that's just simplicity in pricing. So that's kind of what we are.
Yeah, I'm super intrigued by this. So is it an intentional choice? You've never used MSP, or is this something that you've switched from? Talk to me a little bit about the choices there.
I think we are called that very frequently by our own clients and even some of our employees. But I always felt like the MSP term, as the race to the bottom began, right? And as it started happening, I felt like there was this pushback from the clients that they were tired of MSPs. I would not say that MSPs right now are looked favorable upon by talent in the marketplace or clients. And that, you know, and I get that it's challenging. I'm not knocking MSPs, et cetera. I mean, it's challenging, right? But that said, it's like, well, we don't want to be lumped into them. We've got a completely different approach. We do it a completely different way. We're not your traditional MSP in our pricing. So why would we use that term? And instead, we just chose to use no term. We are not any sort of box. We are Pliancy. And we have our Pliancy platform, and that's our approach.
Got it. So, you know, let me put this into some tangible bits for people. Give me a little bit of sense of the size, revenue, kind of numbers that you use to describe the business so listeners can understand, you know, the organization.
Sure. So we are bootstrapped. So we don't have investors or anybody like that at the moment. And that's intentional. We're 130 people, I believe, somewhere in that range. Our average growth year over year is around 70%. And we've been hitting those numbers for roughly four or five years. And to be fair, we used to be called TSG, and we were your typical stodgy three-letter boring consulting company. And in 2015, we kind of took this idea of moving from private cloud, which a lot of companies do now or did do over the last couple of years. We started doing 15 years ago. And we said, we need to get out of private cloud. There's no runway there. It's going to be, you know, we need to get out of that. Well, it was our most profitable thing. And that's when we started building SaaS orchestration platforms and going that route. But yeah, so we're about probably trailing 12, somewhere around 30 million in revenue, maybe 32, somewhere in that range.
Gotcha. Now, encoded in what you said earlier, I want to dive in a little bit more to get a sense. You do have contracts with your customers, right? And there's components of it that are recurring and components that are consulting. Or can you describe that for me, how those relationships work?
Listen, if you're going to go into the market and you're going to be different, then you really need to focus on lowering the barrier to entry. You know, the idea that if you want to offer a different solution, then you need to share some of the risk with the person that's choosing you or signing up for you or using your services, because you got to remember they're representing the company and their own job. And if they choose Pliancy and it's a 2-year commitment or whatever it is, and Pliancy doesn't deliver, well, why didn't you hire IBM? Right? All these other MSPs, their pricing was the same. They all had identical pricing. They all had the same offerings, the same solutions. That's what our friends use. That's what others use. Why did you choose Pliancy and lock us in for a year? They're not delivering. And so I've never done contracts. We've always been month to month. We have 98% retention of our clients. There are years that we go by with 100% retention. And so, you know, really we've got great social proofing with some of the amazing companies that we work with that are very bold. And we have such a low barrier to entry. You got that amazing social proof. Holy moly, they work with these companies. These are amazing companies. And they don't have contracts. And I think that's been a huge vessel for us to get the adoption that we have and the growth that we have. Especially with no sales team. Yeah.
Okay. Now you said another. So no sales team. Talk to me about kind of how acquisition works.
Yeah. It's all word of mouth, right? No surprise, right? All MSPs are word of mouth, or the majority of them are. We just simply feel like the best thing you can do for growth, and I'm sure many other MSPs, you know, feel the same way, which is like, listen, focus all of your effort, money, et cetera, on delivering results that are worth talking about. And if you do that, that will drive your sales. And so rather than spend money on outbound sales teams and commissions and all of that, we just say, let's just deliver a better experience and let that do the driving. Now, we do have two people in our sales teams because there's obviously red lines, legal situations, updating. There's a lot of things that happen to close a sale that are not related to outbound or commission, which we don't do any of that. So we do have two people on the sales team that meet and vet clients and figure out if they're a good fit. We turn away about 3/4 of our people that come to us because they're looking for something that's more like a traditional MSP, or can you just do this project, or hey, we only have one office, we need you to support. Great for, you know, many MSPs, doesn't fit our model. And there was just a lot of noise as we grew. And so we hired two people to help kind of manage all of that inbound.
Okay. Can you walk me through the bootstrapping then? So, you know, kind of how you go through the entire process a little bit to give me a sense of how that all came about.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously we all know, you know, trunk slam or backpack, whatever you want to call it. It takes about $99 and some time on LegalZoom to start an MSP. And I was no different, right? It's 2008 or something like that. And, you know, the crash had not yet begun. It was about a month before that. And I just decided to leave the MSP I was at. And the clients naturally, I mean, this is how every professional services company starts, right? Whether it's a law firm or whatever, you leave, you're the talent. Clients go, where are you going? We're going to follow you wherever you go. Now, for me, I wasn't planning to go to another MSP. I was just planning to go get one of those really cool jobs at a Silicon Valley startup. The idea that there'd be water slides and buses picking me up and I'm from the Midwest. Oh, man, talk about stories when I go back home. And instead, one of the clients, and it was Sri Shrey, who was at Coastal Ventures, Matrix Partners. You know, he was a client I was working with back at the other MSP. He was like, listen, I invest in people and not ideas. And that's something you learn as you work with more and more investors. I just love the way you have been working with us. I love your approach to technology and how involved you get with our business to help us use technology. I think if you started a consulting firm, you'd do exceptionally well. And, you know, I was like, I know how hard these businesses are. You know, man, these are hard businesses to grow. I just worked at one, but I felt like I didn't want to let him down. And I felt like, oh man, well, if he believes in me, you know, maybe I could do something different. Maybe I could make something big. And so I agreed. And they were our first client. And of course, the other MSP was, you know, oh, they're going to sue me potentially and all of that. And I said, I'm scared. You know, I can't afford, you know, a lawsuit or any of these sorts of things. And the client was like, we'll pay for all your legal fees. You know, if you're willing to do this, and we'll be your first client. And I was like, okay. And I remember writing on a whiteboard saying, this is what I need to pay my bills. This is what I need to eat. I was already stockpiling ramen for this adventure I was going on. I was living in a studio apartment with three people at the time. And I remember it was by the end of that week, I had surpassed what I needed. And then some with clients that had heard, you know, that I'd gone out on my own and wanted to join the adventure. And so that kind of happened. And then I immediately started deploying the ideas I had that the MSP that they didn't want to hear, right? They didn't want to displace their labor into automations or smart technology because that was their bread and butter. I said, no, if we put VMware in a data center and we start leasing this back out in a controlled manner, they don't need to buy $5,000 PowerEdge servers. They can pay $100 a month and have access to ours. And they said, do you know how much money we make on a PowerEdge server? You're crazy. And I said, well, it's not about that. That's tied to labor. That's not predictable. That's, you know, it's CapEx. And so the first thing I did is I started doing that. I remember I took two broken PowerEdge servers and put them all together to make one or whatever. And you've been in data centers, I'm sure, Dave. There's always that section of the data center where it's like the wild, wild west. And you're like, what is going on over there? Cables all over the place. Servers aren't secure. They're just tipped sideways. Well, that was me, you know, and I found that $200 a month colo location. I put the VMware 2.0, I think was what was around at that time, in it. And I spun up an SBS server, and the next client that called me said, you know, we want to get spun up. We're a new firm, and, you know, we'd like to use you. And I said, great, I got this solution called TSG Cloud at the time, which was private cloud hosting. I can put you on that. And by end of day today, you'll have SBS and email working, and it'll be $100 an employee a month. And they said, sounds good to us. And I was like, holy moly, it's starting, right? Like, this is amazing. You know, like, this is exactly what I was hoping for. I can build automations in VMware. I can deploy, you know, templates. This is great. Then the next client did the same thing, and they agreed. And the next one, and the next one. And then pretty soon all of my clients were on that solution. And that meant I could manage them with consistency, meant I could produce a quote to them when new clients are coming that was predictable. I could tell them exactly what their costs were going to be and exactly. So that grew, and pretty soon we had hundreds of users on that and everything. And you know, the great thing about that is what allowed me to hire better talent, pay them better. We kind of were, when people want to leave this industry, and you know this, there's really nowhere to go if you're already at maybe one of the bigger MSPs or something. It's like, oh, I love working with all these different clients in this technology, but I feel like I've hit my ceiling in this industry. And the company I'm working for doesn't have management tiers. It doesn't have a lot of unique areas I can go into. I feel like I'm in a cul-de-sac. And so I offered this 20%, you know, increase where they can come over here and they have a new ceiling. It's a little higher and they get to work with these amazing clients. And so I just kept picking up this amazing talent and they would deliver amazing results. And we had the product that allowed us to offset and bring revenue in that wasn't tied to labor, which allowed us to then reinvest in that product. And so I think that was really the key to the bootstrapping was, listen, like, you have to have the financial capabilities to invest in differentiation. The differentiation will drive your growth, drive the talent. And then it's just patience for many, many years, just patience of doing that.
Now, I'm going to assume we're talking now in 2022. I'm going to assume you're not running a bunch of stuff in private cloud, that you're now leveraging all kind of public cloud facilities and SaaS. So is that a fair assessment? And what's the stack look like a little bit?
Yeah. So our stack is, most of our stuff is in GCP. And I'm talking way beyond my pay grade right now. Now that we got like engineers and developers and things. But most of that runs in GCP. And most of it is delivered through, Kubernetes containers and whatnot, microservices. And so that's kind of what runs our platform and our automations and everything. And then I would say maybe 5% of our clients might have a server on site. Or another 10-15% might have some AWS needs because they're in life science. But for the most part, we're really looking for companies that are brand new, that don't have technical debt. You know, while other MSPs might be fighting over that 100-person client, you know, oh man, that would be a great deal. We just see red flags of technical debt, which is like, great, now we're going to have to move, you know, deal with the fact that they've got a bunch of physical assets or this, that, and the other thing. And so we generally only go after small clients that we believe in that will grow. And then therefore we can deploy our solutions and our approaches and our automations and produce predictable results for them, as opposed to inheriting technical debt. But yeah, so we also are built on top of Okta. I believe we were the first MSP to deploy Okta. They didn't have any multi-tenant. They didn't have any, this was like 6 years ago. We reached out to them, and today, you know, Microsoft would have smacked us on the hand for breaking the EULA. Okta at the time was like, you want to do what now? You want to take our APIs and you want to build on top of them a multi-tenanted version of Okta? Okay, go for it. And so we were in their retail channel. We just bought Okta's Pliancy and then built this platform on top of it. So none of our consultants were logging into Pliancy, into Okta. They're logging into us. And through the APIs and orchestration, they're controlling Okta, which meant we could create division of access and role-based access control and all of these things that you couldn't do because Okta was not multi-tenanted. And still to this day, Okta is not multi-tenanted, but all of our clients are on Okta. And so we use Okta as one of the major pillars of our automation. Same with Duo. Duo didn't have a multi-tenant MSP program back then. So we worked with Duo when they were smaller, built a multi-tenanted version of that. So yeah, that's kind of the unique offering that we have, is that we're taking some of these enterprise products and solutions that are not accessible by most MSPs yet, and then bringing that accessibility to small emerging businesses.
So implied in that is a little bit, I want to get a sense of where your people spend their time, because I'm hearing different pieces and it doesn't sound like it's as much of the traditional kind of infrastructure stuff as many other MSPs might think about. How do your people spend their time with the customers?
Yeah, well, first of all, the definition of infrastructure has changed and is continuing to change. A lot of what we see as infrastructure today is connecting disparate apps together and moving data, making them work. HR wants to use this platform. It's got to connect to that platform. But we still do a lot of AWS for our life science clients. And we do obviously roll Meraki and do all of the, you know, the traditional office buildouts and Zoom, et cetera. So I would say the majority of our people are, well, first of all, we have a unique model, and this might help you understand. So we do not have the tiered approach that most companies have, where it's like you call and you get tier one and they try their best and it goes to tier two or tier three. We have a named account approach, which means you get a consultant that will fix your Outlook and then also help you deploy Meraki, help you build out the complex boardroom, help you with AWS. And so they generally are more consultants, right? And we find that that works best from two perspectives. One, consultants prefer to own their clients and the relationships. They really like that sense of ownership. This is my client. The results that this client is having is mine. When you start having tier one, tier two, tier three, you start to have Timmy screwed it up. Now the client's unhappy because they, you know, and there's this like struggle of this versus us versus them and everything. So we still do the majority of the gamut of what any other MSP or IT consulting firm would do, if not sometimes more. It's just really deployed in a different way. But one of the more unique ways we might spend some of our time, and it's not always the case, we wish it was more, is we primarily work with startups and emerging companies. And so they look at how we run our business and ask for advice from people like our VP of Ops or HR. Oh, what do you guys use? How do you do this? And man, that's my favorite consulting. I wish we got asked that more, and we are getting it asked. It's asked, being asked of us more, but I really wish that more would ask, which is what should we use? Should we use Amex or Divi? Please use Divi. We can help show you how that can sync the QuickBooks and how you can have all this amazing self-reporting for receipts and everything. You know, oh, we're going to use ADP. Please don't use ADP. You know, can you please use Gusto until you're about 50 people, or maybe look at Zenefits if you think you're going to scale? So we love consulting on that sort of stuff, and we eat our own dog food. I mean, we are pushing the limits of technology that runs our own business. We didn't even hire a finance person, I think, until we hit $30 million in revenue. So, you know, it's like, why? Because most of it was automated, right? We had consultants that love technology go into these areas of our business and say, how do I do this with less? What's the new modern tech stacks that we can be using to solve these problems, right? We ate our own dog food on that. And so anyway, that's where I wish they'd spend more time. We could spend more time, but otherwise it's just structured different. It's still the same work, just structured different.
I hear every conventional MSP, and I'm putting that kind of in quotes, screaming about standardization and process. And you've talked a lot about automation. How do you reconcile that tension there, that perception that, like, you're doing one-on-one consulting with the organizations, you've assigned a person, yet you're also trying to do automation? How do you reconcile that?
So, I mean, first of all, hire a technical writer. I would bet that the majority of MSPs do not have a technical writer. What they do have is a technical person, such as myself, doing their best. Don't. I think when we were about 10 people, we hired a technical writer that came from Facebook. And what a difference that made. I mean, our struggle with documentation and knowledge base and everything, just, I mean, I wish I would have known when we were two people, I would have brought that person in. They're an amazing person. So we started really focusing on communications and writing. And so we have like 800 articles in our knowledge base, and the majority of them are not how to fix Outlook. You know, they are, how does Pliancy operate? Why do we do what we do? And that was something that Dylan, our technical writer, really pounded in my head early. He said, only document what can't be found elsewhere. People will always trust Google more than your own KB. That's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow. We put so much into these articles and everything. You mean no one's reading them? No one trusts it? They're going to Google anyway? It's 100% true. So we started really focusing on, well, what matters to us? What is specific to us? And can we document that? So we get a lot of our standards are pushed through good documentation. And then number two, standards are established before you work with the client, not during. And what I mean by that is the majority of standards that are broken or not aligned happen in the sales process, not during the tenure of support. Because clients will oftentimes signal, or you'll get clarity in that sales call, that this client's going to be different. This one's going to want this or that. It is really hard, but it is the most critical thing any MSP, any business could do is like know your ICP, know your ideal client profile, know what clients you're going to deliver amazing results to, and be disciplined. The first step you can do to be that, to do that, is make sure your CEO and the founder and owner of the company is not involved in sales. I was for a long time, but I had to get out of it because I was the one that kept screwing up the standards. I was the one that said, well, this client's great. I really like them. They're a little different, but man, strategically, you know, it's always wrong. So, you know, you really want to make sure that, you know, you're ingesting these clients and you're communicating clearly to them what your standards are, how you do things, and then you're ironclad on that. You don't adjust, you don't change, you don't have excuses. You have to be consistent on that. Then you can start actually doing automations because now you have consistency. So, you know, we have automations, for example, when a new employee at a client starts, the email that goes out is automated. When we create the account in our platform and it goes out and creates it in Okta and all the different solutions and everything, the email that then goes out that walks that user through setting up their Duo and Okta and getting onboarded at the client that they're at, same one that goes out to everyone. 2,000 new people we support a year, whatever it is, same email. We iterated on it over years to improve it and make it better, et cetera, but that's all automated. So really, if you're going to automate, then you have to have predictable, you know, inputs to have predictable outputs. And so, yeah, I would say that that's been critical. And then also we focus really on the mundane. So when we're building automations, we're not dorks in the basement building erector sets. And that is a dangerous position to be in, is hiring technical people to build automations, because they value the Rubik gold machine with the marbles spinning and all of that more than they do the meaningfulness that it's achieving. And so, you know, we really focused on like figuring out, okay, what is meaningful and low hanging fruit, not what is technically interesting, and let's automate that first. And so we started hammering on that, and it took us 5 years. I mean, to get where we are today, with all the automations that we have. And then, really when we started focusing on our customer, by the way, this is confusing, but we call our customers our employees here. And what I mean by that is any consultant or anyone that's delivering services to the client, that's our customer. Their customer is the client. So we call clients and customers. So customers are the talent that work here. And the reason why is because if you get in the way of their success with their clients, they will leave you. And so they're looking to be empowered. They're looking to have the right access to tools and autonomy to deliver. And if you get in the way of that, they leave. And when they leave, clients follow, right? And so that's something that we've always established here, is that's our customer. So the automations that we do drive experience to them, you know, and then they deliver the experience to the client. So our automations are, what can we do to make their job easier? And then we focus heavily on prioritizing those.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean-Luc Foote.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.